Hey, everyone, and welcome to another deep dive. This time we're going to get into some really fascinating stuff. I think you'll like this one. This one's all about how the Gospels portray Jesus.
Yeah.
And we're going to be looking at, you know, what titles they use for him, why he's so central to the Christian faith, all that good stuff. And our source material for this deep dive is a lecture series on New Testament theology by Dr. David Matthewson.
Great source.
Yeah, he's awesome. And we're not going to get all, you know, theological and debatey here.
Yeah.
We really want to just kind of like get into the text and see how the gospel writers themselves, you know, presented Jesus.
Yeah, it's really a journey of discovery, right? Unpacking all the layers and the meaning and the significance that these early believers saw in Jesus.
So Dr. Matthewson starts by arguing that the gospels present Jesus as the culmination of God's plan. Like, he's not just some random figure popping up, you know.
Right.
He's the climax of a story that begins all the way back in Genesis. And what I thought was super fascinating is how Jesus' own childhood in Matthew chapters 1 and 2, it mirrors key events in Israel's history.
Wow.
It's almost like his life is replaying their story, but on a whole new level. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You see, by mirroring Israel's story in Jesus' childhood, the gospel writers are making a bold statement. They're saying Jesus isn't just a fulfillment of prophecy. He's the embodiment of Israel's hopes and dreams.
Whoa.
Imagine that, the hopes and dreams of an entire nation converging in one person. What do you think that says about how the gospel writers viewed Jesus' significance?
Yeah. I mean, it's like they're saying he's the ultimate embodiment of what God was working towards all along, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But hold on a minute. Claiming Jesus is God himself, that's a pretty bold statement, wouldn't you say?
It is.
I mean, how did the gospel writers even begin to approach this concept?
Well, it's important to remember that the gospel writers were Jewish, so they were coming from a strictly monotheistic perspective.
Right.
But when we look at the gospels, especially John, we see them attributing divine qualities to Jesus. John's gospel even starts with that incredible prologue, John 1:1-18, where Jesus is identified as the Word who was with God and was God.
That's pretty radical.
Yeah.
How did they square this with the idea of one God?
Well, that's something theologians have been grappling with for centuries.
For sure.
But we can see the seeds of later Trinitarian doctrines, the idea of God as one being existing in three persons being planted right here in these early writings.
Okay. That's something I'm definitely going to need to ponder a bit more.
Yeah.
But it's not just titles and fancy words, right?
Right.
Jesus actually does things that were traditionally reserved for God in the Old Testament.
Think about Jesus forgiving sins in Mark 2. This caused a huge stir among the religious leaders because, as they said, who can forgive sins but God alone?
And there are those moments where people straight up worship Jesus, like at the end of Matthew and Luke.
Yeah.
That's a pretty bold move in a monotheistic context.
It certainly is. And it tells us a lot about how the early believers were understanding Jesus. They saw him as worthy of the same devotion and worship that they traditionally reserved for God alone.
So they're starting to see Jesus not just as a prophet or a teacher, but as something more. It's like they're elevating him to the same level as God.
Exactly. And this idea of Jesus being God goes even deeper. It's not just that he became divine at some point. The Gospels hint that he existed before he was born as a human.
Wait, really? What makes them think that?
Well, Dr. Matthewson points to a passage in Matthew 11:25-27, where Jesus talks about hidden things that only God the Father knows, things that he is now revealing. This suggests the level of knowledge and intimacy that goes beyond a normal human relationship with God.
So it's like he's claiming to have this pre-human existence where he was with God. I'm starting to see how this builds on the idea that he's more than just a man.
And there's another interesting observation from a scholar named Simon Gathercole. He noticed that the Gospels often describe Jesus as coming to do things like coming to call sinners or coming to fulfill the law.
So the language itself suggests he's coming from somewhere outside of human existence.
Exactly. It points to this idea of a pre-human origin. And all of this starts to paint a picture of Jesus that's way more than just a prophet or a teacher.
It's like we're piecing together a puzzle here. Jesus, the climax of God's plan, the embodiment of God's presence, both human and divine. It's a lot to wrap our heads around, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
What stands out to you the most in all of this?
What's fascinating to me is how the Gospels don't shy away from these bold claims about Jesus. They're not afraid to challenge traditional Jewish understanding and present him as someone truly unique and extraordinary.
And there's even more to unpack. Mm-hmm. Dr. Matthewson highlights some other key themes about Jesus that are worth exploring. For example, John 1:18 emphasizes that Jesus is God's self-revelation.
Yes, the visible image of the invisible God. It's like God is making himself known to humanity through Jesus.
And there's the idea of Jesus as God's wisdom. In Matthew 11:28-29, Jesus invites people to come to me and learn from me. He's positioning himself as the new source of wisdom.
You know, this idea of Jesus as God's wisdom really gets at the heart of what later theologians would call the Trinity, this concept of God as one being, but existing in three persons. It's a head-scratcher for sure, but we can see the seeds of that idea being planted right here in the Gospels.
So instead of just studying the Torah, people are now encouraged to come to Jesus and learn directly from him. Almost like he's embodying the wisdom of God in a way that the Torah couldn't.
Precisely. And this theme is reinforced in Matthew 12:41-42, where Jesus compares himself to both Jonah and Solomon, implying that he's even greater than these figures who were known for their wisdom.
Okay, I'm starting to see how the gospel writers are building this multifaceted portrait of Jesus. But what about his miracles? Are those just cool stories or do they have a deeper meaning?
They're definitely more than just cool stories. They're signs of his identity and the inauguration of the new creation. In Matthew 8, for instance, Jesus calms a storm, an act that was traditionally attributed to God in the Old Testament. It's like he's demonstrating his power over nature.
So he's doing God things to demonstrate who he really is. But didn't that raise some eyebrows back then? They still believed in one God, right?
Exactly. And for them to attribute these divine actions to Jesus really says something about how they understood him. Remember, they weren't polytheistic. They believed in one God. So to say Jesus was doing these things meant they were putting him on a very high level.
And how one responds to Jesus determines their fate in the kingdom of God.
Yes, the stakes are high. Dr. Mathewson highlights Matthew 10:1c-24 and 11:20-24, where Jesus warns that judgment and inclusion in the kingdom of God are directly tied to one's response to him and his message. It's not just about believing in God in a general sense. It's specifically about recognizing and following Jesus.
So we've covered a lot of ground. Jesus is the fulfillment of God's plan. He embodies God's presence. He performs miracles. And he's the key to entering the kingdom of God.
And this rich understanding of Jesus is further revealed in the titles used to describe him in the Gospels, Messiah, Son of Man, Son of God, and Servant of God, each one highlighting a different facet of his identity and mission.
This idea of Jesus fulfilling prophecy leads us to another fascinating title he uses, Son of Man. It's intriguing that this was his preferred way of referring to himself. Why do you think that might be? But before we get into that, let's take a moment to unpack these fascinating titles of Jesus.
Well, Son of Man is a really interesting title. It links back to Daniel 7:14, where it describes a heavenly figure who receives authority and establishes God's kingdom.
So it connects Jesus to this much bigger cosmic drama. He's not just a human teacher. He's a divine figure with ultimate power. But why do you think this was his favorite way to refer to himself? It seems a little obscure.
Well, it's possible the title was attractive to Jesus because of its ambiguity. You know, Son of Man could refer to both an exalted ruler and a suffering servant, which aligns perfectly with the arc of Jesus' mission.
I see what you mean.
He embodies both power and humility, a king who's willing to die for humanity.
Yeah, it's like the title itself holds the whole story. He's both powerful and humble, kingly, yet willing to die for humanity.
And there's even a possible connection to Adam in Psalm 8, where Son of Man simply means a human being. So by calling himself Son of Man, Jesus might be identifying himself as the new Adam, the one who will redeem humanity from the fall.
Wow, there's a lot packed into that one title. Now, what about Messiah or Christ? These terms are rooted in the Old Testament expectation of a Davidic king who would deliver Israel. Think King David 2.0, but with even more cosmic significance.
Exactly. But here's what I find curious. Jesus rarely uses this title himself, and even silences others who proclaim him as Messiah.
That is strange. If he is the Messiah, why wouldn't he shout it from the rooftops?
Well, Dr. Mathewson suggests that Jesus might have been trying to avoid misinterpretations of his mission, especially those violent political expectations of a Messiah who would overthrow Roman rule. Remember, people were looking for a military conqueror.
So he's deliberately downplaying the political aspects of the Messiah to focus on the spiritual ones. He wants to change the narrative, right?
Exactly. He's redefining what it means to be the Messiah. But it's important to note that Jesus does eventually claim to be the Messiah under oath at his trial in Matthew 26.
So he does own the title when it really counts.
Yeah.
But even then, it's in the context of knowing he's about to be condemned. That's a powerful statement of identity in the face of suffering.
Yes, it is. It shows that even though he was redefining the concept of the Messiah, he wasn't shying away from the title itself.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's move on to another title, Son of God. This one seems pretty straightforward, but I bet there's more to it than meets the eye.
You're right. There are layers here. First, it connects Jesus to Israel, which is often called God's son in the Old Testament, like in Exodus 4:22-23.
So there's this idea of Jesus inheriting and embodying the legacy of Israel, like he's the culmination of their story.
Yes. And it also links him to the Davidic king, as we see in Psalm 2.6 to 7, where God calls the Davidic king his son. So son of God carries messianic implications as well.
Right, because the Messiah was supposed to be a descendant of King David.
Exactly. And then in Matthew 16.16 and John 1.49, we see people explicitly calling Jesus son of God in a messianic context. It becomes more than just a familial term. It's a declaration of his identity as the promised Messiah.
So by this point, son of God clearly points to Jesus as the Messiah. But there's something else you mentioned about John's gospel.
What's unique about John is that he emphasizes the relationship between Jesus and the Father. Jesus is equal to God in essence, but subordinate to the Father in function. He says things like, I have come down from heaven not to do my will, but to do the will of him who sent me. John 6.38.
So it's a complex dance of equality and submission. They're one in essence, but distinct in their roles.
Think about it. Jesus the King, the suffering servant, the Son of God. It's like each title reveals a different angle of this incredibly complex figure. He's not easily put in a box, is he? It makes you wonder which aspect of Jesus resonates most with you. But there's one more title we need to look at, servant of God. Dr. Mathewson said this draws a clear link to Isaiah 52:53.
Oh yeah, the suffering servant who takes on the sins of Israel. That's a powerful image of self-sacrifice and redemption.
It is. And in Matthew 8.17, Jesus's healing ministry is explicitly connected to these servant songs. And then in Mark 10.45, Jesus himself says that the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many.
So he's not just claiming the title, he's actively living out the role of the suffering servant.
Exactly. And this theme of Jesus as the servant who sacrifices himself for humanity becomes central to the Christian understanding of his death and resurrection. It's a key to understanding who he is and why he came.
Wow, I'm starting to see how these titles aren't just labels. They're windows into the gospel's deep and evolving understanding of who Jesus was and what he came to do. What other mind-blowing insights did Dr. Mathewson drop in his lectures?
It really is amazing how much depth there is to these seemingly simple titles. You know, they're not just labels, are they? They're woven into the very fabric of the gospel's narrative, each one adding another layer to this incredible portrait of Jesus.
And it's important to remember that these early Christians were grappling with a really radical idea that God had entered human history in the person of Jesus. You know, they were trying to make sense of who he was, what it meant for their faith, and these titles helped them do that.
It makes you realize these weren't just abstract theological concepts to them. These were real people wrestling with the implications of who Jesus was and what he had done.
This has been an absolutely mind-blowing deep dive. I feel like we've barely scratched the surface, but I'm so much more aware now of how Jesus is portrayed in the Gospels and the significance of the titles they use for him.
It's a journey of discovery that could last a lifetime. The more you explore these texts, the more you uncover.
Okay, listener, I have to ask, knowing what we've learned, which title of Jesus resonates most with you and why? What aspect of his identity speaks to your heart or challenges your understanding?
It's a question worth pondering. Each title offers a unique perspective on who Jesus is and what he means for humanity.
And if this deep dive has sparked your curiosity, I encourage you to explore the Gospels for yourself. Dive into those ancient texts and discover the person of Jesus firsthand. You might be surprised by what you find.
There's always more to learn, more to discover. And that's the beauty of engaging with these ancient texts. They invite us into a lifelong conversation about faith, identity, and the meaning of life itself.
Thanks for joining us on this incredible journey. Until next time, keep diving deep.